My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I didn't pay my mortgage with yesterday's Belmont winnings. I did okay earlier in the card, and I did well yesterday, so I kind of played the Belmont for free, but still, Triple Crown Racing, cashing tickets, not great for me. We'll see if that was the case for our next guest. We had him on after the Kentucky Derby, and I think he said he was only okay. Had him on after the Preakness. He might add the winner. Dave Grinnick from the Daily Racing Form. How'd you do with yesterday's Belmont Stakes?
Yeah, not good. I kind of went against my initial inclination. In fact, I think on your show the day after the Derby, I think I told you Bo Donegal would either A, be favored, and or B, win the Belmont Stakes. I was right about being favored.
Favoritism, yeah.
If I said he would win, I was right. But by a lot happens in 5 weeks, and I wound up picking him third. So I didn't jump on that bandwagon, and I was not necessarily thinking Nest was going to run as well, and she ran really well as she did, and I certainly wasn't on Skippy Longstockings, I'll tell you that. And if I had bet Skippy Longstockings and saw the price was 11-1, I might have thrown up.
Right. Skippy Longstocking, my new favorite, least favorite horse on the planet, because he kind of cut off Simplification, the horse I liked in the Preakness, both at the start and turning for home. And then yesterday, hanging on for third, because I was on We the People. So and he pushed We the People through the early fractions. Not that they were outrageous, but was off his flank the entire time. So he's my least favorite horse on the planet as of right now. So I'll try and beat him wherever he shows up next. All right, let me start there. I thought Mo Donegal was the most talented horse. I thought that he absolutely could win the race. I picked him for second. But the horse I picked on top was We the People, because I thought the race just set up for him, that he was going to be able to get the lead, a relatively easy lead. We saw what he did in the Peter Pan, not only put the field away, but opened up down the stretch. His breeding said the mile and a half was certainly within his scope. Everything went right except the fact that a horse like Skippy Longstocking did stay just off his flank the entire time. Don't know if that kind of pressure got to him. He didn't have it when he got to the stretch. Why do you think We the People came up short in his attempt to go wire to wire?
Because he doesn't want to go that far. Okay. I think that, we talked about, I'm pretty sure we talked about this on the Preakness, day after the Preakness, that because this when he won the Peter Pan, it was the week before, and we had talked about how he won on a one-turn mile and an eighth on a sealed, muddy racetrack, and that when it came time for the Belmont Stakes, it was unlike, well, we knew it wasn't going to be a mile and an eighth, one turn. It was going to be a two-turn mile and a half race, and, up until it looked like you'd get a sloppy racetrack, but it never did rain, so we didn't get that. So it was a total different dynamic. Everybody on the planet saw him as the lone speed. That's why he was made the morning line favorite. He actually went off the second choice at 7-2, almost 4-1. He looked like the lone speed on paper, but you knew someone. You didn't know who. In this case, it was your boy Skippy, but nobody. You didn't know who was going to go after him early. But you knew they weren't going to just let him dance on the lead. And also, I don't think he was the type of horse that wants to go just 50, 115. He wants to run. And, you know, when Skippy pressed him and, you know, he was going legitimate fractions, he just backed up because he doesn't want to go that far.
No, I thought his breeding, I did some back research on his breeding. Tapas horses have done very well, their progeny in the Belmont Stakes. But you never know if they're going to run right exactly to their breeding, and you are probably right. He shouldn't be going a mile and a half. How impressive was Mo Donegal's win for you?
I thought it was a solid effort. I thought it was exactly what Todd Fletcher does best. He runs a horse in the Kentucky Derby. The horse runs a respectable race, and you can pick it. You can look at it and say, "Well, he had a pretty legitimate excuse, or he could have run better if this happened or if that happened." And then Todd, what he does is he skips the Preakness, and nobody gets crazy about that anymore. They get crazy when Richard Strike skips the Preakness, but nobody gets crazy when Todd Fletcher skips the Preakness, which he does almost all the time. And then he gets ready for the Belmont, and the horses run extremely well. Now he has 4 wins in 7 seconds over the history over like the last 20 years of the Belmont Stakes, and. It doesn't always work, obviously, but it worked this time. This is a horse was a 2-time graded stakes winner at a mile and eighth, and he ran a respectable race in the Kentucky Derby. He was running with Rich Strike. He went 10 wide. Rich Strike went 2 wide. There's the difference in why he wasn't closer in the Derby, and he got a very nice trip in the Belmont under Irad Ortiz Jr. Close enough to the pace where without using himself, and then when he got in the clear, tipped out. He had the most run. The one thing Fletcher said that gave him confidence about this horse is he said, "I think I had the horse that will run the fastest last quarter of a mile in the race." And he was spot on. He did.
Did just that. And a very good ride by Irad, as you mentioned. Had him close enough. No traffic problems. Made one move to get in position to be able to open him up. And he did just that one going away. So of the 3 classic winners... on paper, going forward, and we know what comes next summer, Travers, Haskell, before we start to look toward the Breeders' Cup at the end of the year, who's in best shape to keep the winning, add to a Triple Crown victory in the big summer stakes? Mo Donegal, Rich Strike, and or voting.
Early voting.
Sorry, Chad Brown.
I'm going to say those 3, Mo Donegal, and not because it's the most recent thing I saw. It's because I do think he wants to, look, the goal for all these horses is to get to the Travers on August 27th in Saratoga. Buy your tickets early. I think he's the best one equipped to get the mile and a quarter. Like, he wants to run that far. Early voting, yes, he ran a mile and 3/16. I know it's only another 16th of a mile, but I don't know that if you watched the Preakness that you thought, wow, he wants to go another 16th of a mile and be really, really good horses. And Rich Strike is back to the drawing board. He's going to have to prove himself yet again because he just didn't run very well yesterday. And maybe he's a one-hit wonder. Maybe it's a scenario where he can only run on inside of horses, as his trainer Eric Reed was trying to intimate yesterday, or maybe he just needs that blistering pace. I don't think Mo Donegal needs anything specific to happen. And I think he wants to go the distance. So of those 3 horses you've mentioned, I think he's in the best shape moving forward to get to the Travers and do well, and maybe even the Breeders' Cup Classic and do well.
Certainly agree on that. Chad Brown won the second leg of the Triple Crown this year and had exactly no horses in yesterday's Belmont Stakes. I know Saratoga's his home track, but Belmont's pretty important to him, too. He wins, like, every single big grass race there over the course of the year, but this one was on dirt. He's got 3 legitimate 3-year-olds who can be major players on the dirt this summer into leading to Breeders' Cup Day. How do you think he moves around early voting, Zandon, and Jack Christopher yesterday, who was very impressive in the Woody Stevens run against each other? Because he'll put 3 or 4 of his own horses against each other in grass races. Will he do that in big races with the 3 very good dirt 3-year-olds he has?
Well, he'll give them the opportunity to prove that they belong in the Travers. So Jack Christopher, coming off the 7-furlong Tour de Force yesterday, will go to Monmouth Park and run in the Haskell on July 23rd. So he'll get that first try around 2 turns. He has been a mile because he won the Champagne last year, but he's never been 2 turns. He was going to be 2 turns in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last year, but he got hurt and scratched a couple days before. So he'll try that race and see how things go. He could always, if he runs impressively, He could always go to the Travers. If he doesn't, he could cut back to the Allen Jerkins, which is a 7/8 race on the same day as his Travers. Early voting, let me go back. Zandon, who was third in the Kentucky Derby, is going to run in the Jim Dandy, which is July 21st. And he's sort of recharging the batteries on that horse. So the Jim Dandy would suppose allegedly lead to the Travers. Early voting, he hasn't made a decision on just yet. It'll either be the Haskell, or he's got to run two of them. You know, he's got to run one, you know, two against each other at some point. It's either the Haskell or the Jim Dandy. But my gut tells me he'd run him in the gym in the Haskell, just because that track favors his running style. And then, you know, see how they run, and then see if he'll have three in the Travers. He'd like to have three in the Travers. He'd like to have six in the Travers, because as much as Mike Rapoli, the owner of Mo Donegal, wanted to win the Belmont, that's how much Chad Brown, a native of Mechanicville, New York near Saratoga, wants to win the Travers.
Understood. Off the top of your head, and I know you could look it up easily, but you probably haven't yet. Any time or the last time one trainer had three horses in the Travers?
I know Nick Zito. I know any time. I don't know if it's the last time. I know Nick Zito had three horses in the Travers because he had one for George Steinbrenner, for Mary Lou Whitney, and for Tracy Farmer. So I know that he had three, and I believe that was 04. So he had Birdstone, who won it, and I believe he had one for Steinbrenner and one for the Farmer.
That's pretty good ownership. If they want to lean toward that race and say, yeah, okay, we'll get him ready. We'll get him prepped. Understandable and good for Nicky Z. All right. We mentioned Jack Christopher and the outstanding performance he had in the Woody Stevens. If he had been healthy, he could have been a horse going through this Triple Crown trail, maybe even sitting on a potential Triple Crown yesterday going into the Belmont, but you can't control injuries. But he wasn't even the best horse on the card yesterday. As good as he was, and it's better than Mo Donegal, what Flightline did in the Met Mile was uber impressive. I know that he is a superstar horse. Know that he overcame some issues that he wasn't planning on yesterday, not being able to make the lead, coming off the pace, coming in a stalking trip, and then just blowing away the field. I know he is, for me, the biggest star in horse racing right now. We're only going to see him once between now and the Breeders' Cup? Why is that?
Well, first of all, I don't know if that's going to be the case. Secondly, it's part of it is because he runs so fast and needs that extra time to recover. I think that's overstated. I think that's more of an excuse than anything else. But it's been proven out so far. He's been successful, you know, running fast, long layoff, running fast again. But I talked to one of the owners today, and you know, maybe they were blowing smoke up my, you know what, but I was trying to convince them to like at least consider the Travers the Whitney on August 6th, and because I'd like to see that horse run against Life is Good at a mile and an eighth, and I even would go as far as if I'm the New York Racing Association to bump up that purse to a chunky $4 or $5 million, so that other horses would run in the race, because those two would probably run 1-2, but you run third, you get $1 million or something like that. That's the race I want to see, and I'd love. And if you're a sportsman, and there's a lot of owners in this horse. And I don't know all the kickers that you know, were from a Stallion deal. If he remains undefeated, it's this. Or if he wins that race, it's that. But if you got him against Life is Good in the Whitney, I think that would be huge. But that could be the only race he runs in before the Classic, too. But yeah. I don't know. You go from a mile to a mile and a quarter in the Pacific Classic, which is the race I think you read that they were thinking about running in on September 3rd. That's a long time. And then you're going from a mile to a mile and a quarter. I know he's gifted, but that's asking a lot.
Right, but he hasn't been a distance yet, so when do you want to take... At some point, it's going to be a pretty big jump. Do you want to take it between your one race and then the Breeders' Cup, or do you want to take it in your next race and then the Breeders' Cup isn't as big a jump thereafter? That, I think, is debatable. Here's my question to you, and you've been around this game and been closer to it than I have. We've both been close enough, but if they are being as protective of them as they are, it's one of two reasons. Either they want him to finish up undefeated. They don't want to take a chance that he loses and then put it all on the line at the Breeders' Cup. And if you lose there, what can you do? It's the last race of the year, and it's the biggest one of them all. But the horse has also had some injury issues. Not that you can ever tell when he gets out onto the racetrack and runs, but if you believe the connections, and John Saddle is not that kind of guy, we'd lie about those things, that he hasn't always come back out of his races ready to go a week later. They have been cautious with him. Which do you think it's more of, the fact that they are guarding the potential Mega Million payday on his breeding rights, or that, no, Jody, I think Saddler's telling us the truth. The horse isn't the most sound animal on the planet.
My guess is they have some issues that they have to deal with that aren't necessarily major, and they may not even be soundness issues. They may be sort of, you know, foot issues, issues that probably lead you to have to give a horse 2 weeks off or something and then start back up again. So I would think lean more toward the physical nature of the horse. Again, I don't think it's anything major. I just think there's some probably nagging things that they give him extra time off, and then they have to try to start all over again. Because, you know, he's now a multiple grade one winner. He won the Malibu. He's won the Met Mile, which everyone talks about as a, I'm using air quotes here, a stallion-making race. So yeah, we've got that. I mean, I think the brilliance that he's shown in his four races has made him a stallion no matter what happens the rest of his career, whether it's one race, two races, or they go into next year and they run in the Pegasus and the Saudi Cup and whatever, which I doubt is going to happen. But I think he's already made himself a stallion. Now, to me, you go after, you know, so go after some glory, go after Horse of the Year and run, you know, run against Life is Good, who's a very good horse at a mile and eighth, and do it in a prestigious race like the Whitney. And then it doesn't even matter what happens the rest of the year. If you don't make it back to the Breeders' Cup, so be it. You won the Met Mile, the Whitney, and you beat one of the best horses in training, you win.
Here's the reason why I think you actually have a chance of seeing that happen. No has been a California-based horse prior to yesterday, and that's where Saddler is based. But the Breeders' Cup this year isn't in Cali. It seems like it's there about four out of every 5 years. But that's not the case this year. It's in Keeneland. So the fact that you're just going back out to the West Coast, no, you never have to leave again after yesterday's race, not the case. You're going to have to bring them back east somewhat, at least to Kentucky. So maybe they come back and go up to Saratoga and then down to Kentucky to Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup. All right, you kind of touched on this. I want you to give me more. Many owners for Flightline, two different partnerships are part owners, which means within those partnerships, there are many different owners. It would seem to be a very good thing for the industry. If you've got partners that are part of this and you got the best horse in training and it's that exciting, but it's also a horse that runs every 3 months and may only get three races over the course of the year. How good is Flightline success because of the way the ownership is set up? How good for the game is it or isn't it?
See, I'm not so sure about the way the ownership is set up as what you, the other point you alluded to watch a really talented horse race only three times a year, to me, doesn't do much for the industry. You know, okay, great. You want more. Like, he left you yesterday wanting to see more.
Yep.
And if I have to wait till September 3rd, a Labor Day Saturday when there's other stuff happening and it's Del Mar and it's a Pacific Classic, it's going to be a 4 or 5 horse field because there's not many horses. There's not many horses that are probably out there that would take him on. Maybe a Country Grammar. I don't know. That's the horse we're going to do by World Cup. But on the East Coast, because no one on the East Coast is going to ship west to run against that horse. He's going to, whether he likes it or not, he's going to have to come this way if he wants to take on the better horses. So he could take the easy way out and run the Pacific Classic, and maybe people aren't going to really follow it that much. And then if he runs the Breeders' Cup Classic and then wins it, and you're like, wow, that's a great horse. And then they say the next day, well, he's going to go stand at such and such farm for, you know, $500,000 a breed. He's going to be like, okay, great. To me, it doesn't do much for the industry.
I know you're a New York racing guy. They listed 46. I talked to a couple people who were there, said they had no issues whatsoever on lines getting around. Said 46 might have been a generous appraisal of the crowd. They had it capped at 50. They surely didn't get the 50, and they announced 46. Accurate, slight overstatement. Yeah, they padded the heck out of that, Jody.
Yeah, I think that first number, it's like the Price is Right, right? You're buying that car, and you're like, okay, is it higher or lower than this? Well, I would go lower, and I would take a 3 as that first number. Maybe the 6 is accurate, I'm not sure. And the other three numbers are inconsequential, but I think the first number of attendance starts with a 3, and you could go either way of that 6 and the second number. I think it was like 35, 36,000 people there.
Dave Groening breaking out the prices right here on the show. I love it. Absolutely love it. And one thing they couldn't fudge was the handle. And it was down 12% from the previous year's Belmont Stakes, putting the year before with COVID and changing the date, everything else aside. The key one to compare it to was last year, down 12%. Why do you think that was the case?
Small fields. I mean, we had a horse, a champion horse at 12:30, basically starting the card, gets scratched at the gate. I don't even know how much money they had to refund off that. So that five horse field became a four horse field. There were four other, I think there were four or five other. Five and six horse fields. So, you know, if there's only so many horses to bet on, you can't even bet on the long shots, because there aren't enough long shots to wager on. So just short fields, which is an industry-wide problem as well, but that would be the reason why
if anything, do you think Belmont does to make sure they don't have four and five horse fields on Belmont Stakes Day next year?
You know, one of the things, and it's a double-edged sword, because if you get horses like Flightline and Latruska, you know, big champion horses that nobody wants to run against, it's a little tough to fill out those fields. So I think, you know, maybe some purse increases for some of these stakes, or maybe somebody gets together with other jurisdictions and you don't run that other stake right up against a week in front of my stake, and then, you know, sort of those horsemen have to direct their horses to New York. So I think the industry has a lot of issues with fewer horses, but the same amount of stakes races. So how does that work? The math doesn't add up. You need fewer stakes races if you have fewer horses.
Well, the math usually adds up when we get Dave Groening on. That was the case again here. DG, always appreciate you. I'll get back to you sometime in the summer when we get to some of those big races we were talking about. Appreciate you jumping on after all three Triple Crown races this year.
Thanks for having me, Jody. Good to talk to you.
Dave Groening, you can read him in the Daily Racing Form, drf.com, online. One of the best horse racing journalists in the country. All right, Jody Mack coming back, getting the phones reopened. Hit me up at 855-212-4227. We can talk Belmont. We can talk about the NBA Final. Rekindles tomorrow. Warriors-Celtics Game 5. Yes, later in the show, about 40 minutes from now, as a matter of fact. We're going to give hockey some love. Justin Cuthbert from Yahoo Sports, their senior NHL writer, is going to join. We have only touched on, I gave the Yankees props at the beginning of the show. I haven't heard from any Yankee fans because they're killing it, right? They beat up their opponents on a daily basis. They're so far and away the best team in baseball. It's scary. I'll take baseball calls. 855-212-4227. Get on with the Mac Man right here on CBS Sports Radio.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not so secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.